Let's go ahead and open back up to Genesis 24:29 today as we continue this story of how Rebecca comes out of Mesopotamia to become the wife of Yitzhak, the promised son of Abraham and Sarah. Now, you remember the story up to this point. It is not Abraham that goes. It is his servant, unnamed, but a lot of tradition makes it Eleazar. This servant appears to have an abiding faith in the one true God. Because when he pauses at the well next to the city of Haran, he offers up a prayer that God will do a miracle in identifying the young lady to be Yitzhak's wife to him. And that miracle was that when he asked any young lady for a drink of water from her jar, she would not just simply offer him a drink, but volunteer to water his 10 camels until they are no longer thirsty. And only Rebecca is the one that did just that. And that's an amazing thing, as we already talked about. That probably could have taken a couple of hours in order to get that task taken care of. And the servant watched her the whole time. And once she was finished, he then gives her a nose ring, a couple of arm bangles, and identifies himself as a servant of Abraham, a relative of her family, and he was hoping for a place to stay for the night. And so Rebecca runs home, lets everybody know that there is a stranger at the well, but a stranger who has quite the story, and he would like to come and stay with us. And so it is at this point that we have another character enter the picture, a character who plays a big role in a later story, and his name is Laban. Verse 29 of Genesis 24, Rebecca had a brother whose name was Laban. Now, I don't know how you're imagining Rebecca, but she is an unmarried young woman. So I'm guessing she's probably in her 20s, because at this time, especially amongst the more longer-lived Semite race, and especially amongst those that come in the family of Abraham, and so Rebecca is definitely in that family, they probably delayed getting married a little bit longer than others. And so I think that she is unmarried and unbetrothed and is probably in her 20s. Now, her brother Laban is probably right around that age or perhaps a little bit younger. Now, why do I suspect that? Because he will be a key player in the story of Jacob that happens 97 years after this story. And so he is a much older man at that time. I'm thinking he's in his early 100s, like he is in 110, 120 maybe. And so that means he has to be a much younger man here. But he is apparently functioning as the heir apparent of the family. And his father seems to almost be out of the picture. He's not dead. We'll see a little interaction from Bethuel. Laban is the one that makes a lot of the arrangements. So Laban ran out toward the man to the spring. So he's going to act as the official host for this servant of Abraham. As soon as he saw the ring, that is the nose ring, and the bangles on his sister's arms, and he heard the words of Rebekah, his sister, "Thus the man spoke to me," he went to the man, and behold, he was standing by the camels at the spring. And he, Laban, said, "Come in, O blessed of he who is." Now I must remind you once again, he who is being inserted into the text at this point by Moses. The divine name, Yahweh, was not known back in the time of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and all of those guys in the book of Genesis. But the reason that he, that is, the prophet Moses, is writing it into the text here is because he wants his first readers, the Israelis coming out of Egypt, to understand that the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is he who is, the same one that's dealing with them, the Creator. And by extension, we need to understand that. Now, what did he actually say? My speculation, as I've offered multiple times as well, is he uses one of two ancient names for God that happened during this time period. He either says, "O blessed of El Elyon, God Most High," or perhaps, "O blessed of El Shaddai, the God of my chest, my God." Why do you stand outside? Why are you sticking around out here? "I have prepared the house and a place for the camels." So Laban, acting as the male host in this household because he is the heir, he invites him to come home and says, "I've already made arrangements for full hospitality." Verse 32, "So the man came to the house, unharnessed the camels," meaning he has now taken off all of their burdens, their saddles, the straps on their heads around their muzzles, and he's taken that all off so that the camels can actually rest. And he gave them straw and fodder, and then there was water to wash his feet and the feet of the men who were with him. Now there's 10 camels, but there's many others with this servant of Abraham besides the camel drivers. I've told you more than likely there is a security detail as well, because they're carrying a lot of valuable material to function as a dowry on this run. So there's a lot of people being welcomed at Laban's house as guests, and all of them have to have their feet washed, and all of them have to be fed. Verse 33, "Then food was set before him to eat, but he, the servant, said, 'I will not eat until I've said what I have to say.'" Now we will notice as this story progresses that this servant seems to be in a hurry. Now why is that? I would suggest to you that the reason he's in a hurry is because his master Abraham was acting as if he was going to pass away, die, before this servant could ever get back. And so I think that kind of spooked him a little bit. And so he is wanting to do a quick turnaround here. Now, it's about 2 weeks' trip. And so even if he does an overnight turnaround, it's going to be a month since he left Abraham by the time he gets back. And so he seems to be very focused on getting home before his master passes away. So he doesn't want to wait until after dinner to talk business, because that's what this is going to be. He wants to talk it now. And so he tells the story. And here comes our repeat. And you'll see that all of this is exactly as we've already read it, but it is reinforced in our minds with little bits and pieces of extra detail thrown in. So Laban, apparently, said, "Speak on." So he said, "I am Abraham's servant." Now, immediately, they know the family connection with that. Abraham is Rebecca and Laban's great uncle. Their father's father, Nahor, is Abraham's brother. Now, Nahor seems to have passed away by now, and that's probably not all that surprising. Abraham is currently approaching 140 years of age, and his slightly younger sister slash wife died when she was 127. Now, it's not understood that Abraham's going to live to be 175. And so it would appear that his brother has already passed away at this time. So verse number 35, "He who is," and again, the God of creation, the God of Abraham and Nahor, and of their father, Terah, "this God has greatly blessed my master, and he has become great. He," meaning God, "has given him flocks and herds, silver and gold, male servants and female servants, camels and donkeys." So in reality, we know that Abraham is probably the richest person in the lower Middle East. And so his tent city probably has a population of well over 1,000 because of all the servants that are involved, perhaps even over a couple of thousand. And that is more than likely this time a larger population than most of the cities of this region, if not all of them. Continuing, verse 37, "My master made me swear." Remember the whole put my hand under Abraham's thigh and make basically a swearing on the family jewels that I will keep this assignment exactly as you give me. "My master made me swear, saying, 'You shall not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites in whose land I dwell.'" Now, this is not a genetic issue. It is true that Abraham is a Semite, while the Canaanites are Hamites. But it's not a problem of gender, of ethnicity. The problem is religion, faith commitment. The Canaanites worship all sorts of false gods and goddesses. Abraham worships the one true God, the creator of heaven and earth, the God Most High, El Shaddai, and as is being written down by Moses the prophet, He who is. And so this is the reason why Abraham makes his servant go to another place where God Most High is definitely worshipped, and family members can be attained there. Verse 38, "But you shall go to my father's house, Terah, at Haran, to my clan, and take a wife for my son." I said to my master, "Well, perhaps the woman will not follow me." But he said to me, "He who is, before whom I have walked, will send his angel, his supernatural messenger with you, and prosper your way. So you shall take a wife for my son from my clan, from my father's house, and then you will be free from my oath when you come to my clan. If they will not give her to you, you will be free from my oath." So that was the Abrahamic oath. Now he continues, I came today to the spring, and I said, O he who is, O God Most High, El Shaddai, the God of my master Abraham, if now you are prospering the way that I go, behold, I'm standing by the spring of water. Let the virgin, the unmarried young lady, unbetrothed as well, by the way, who comes out to draw water, to whom I say, please give me a little water from your jar to drink. And who will say to me then in response, drink, and I will draw for your camels also. Let her be the woman whom he who is has appointed for my master's son. So he asked for a miracle. And now he's telling that story. I asked for a miracle. Now think about this. It's not just Laban and the rest of the family that's hearing this for the first time. This is the first time Rebecca's hearing the backstory. And she's like thinking, wow, I never imagined when I volunteered for such a hard job that I was answering a prayer for the miracle. Verse 45, before I had finished speaking in my heart, so this is a silent prayer request, behold, Rebecca came out with her water jar on her shoulder. She went down to the spring. Remember, this is one of those wells that's below ground, and you walk on a little semi-spiral staircase down, and then a different one back up again, perhaps, and the water level is down below. So even watering the camels was a really big deal with that. So she went down to the spring, then she drew water, and I said to her, please let me get a drink. She quickly let her jar from her shoulder and said, drink, and I'll give your camels drink also. I drank, and she gave the camels drink also. Again, I'm going to emphasize here, that took well over an hour, I'm sure, for the prayer request to be fully met. He continues with his testimony, his witness. Then I asked her, whose daughter are you? And she said, the daughter of Bethuel, Nahor's son, whom Milcah bore to him. So there is exactly the tie-in to a family of Abraham that this servant would have been looking for. And he's found it by supernatural means, by a miracle. And then he says, so I put the ring on her nose and the little bracelets or bangles on her arms. And then I bowed my head and I worshiped he who is and blessed he who is, the God of my father Abraham, who had led me by the right way to take the daughter of my master's kinsman for his son. So a great testimony story, a great retelling of the event. And everybody in the room, I'm sure, is left going, wow, this is a miracle. This is amazing. God is involved in this. And then he gets to the reason why he didn't want to wait until after dinner. Verse 49. Now then, if you're going to show steadfast love, which is the Hebrew word chesed, and you'll hear me try to teach you this from time to time, it is the idea that God likes us. And in used in person-to-person context, it is we like someone or someone likes us. We have a special relationship. So that's what he's seeking here, not just simply a business contract. He wants personal investment. If you're going to show steadfast love and faithfulness to my master, to Abraham, it will be Uncle Abraham directly for Bethuel. It'll be great Uncle Abraham for Rebecca and Laban. If you're going to show faithfulness to my master, then tell me. So if you're going to agree to a marriage proposal, tell me now. If not, tell me that I may turn to the right hand or to the left. So this is one of our clear indications that he is in a hurry. He says, I don't want to waste any time. If you're not going to go along with the marriage proposal for Rebecca, then you tell me and I'll get out of your hair, I'll get out of your house, and I'll go find somebody else in this family that is open to that. Now, he would have been shocked, I think, after the miracle if they'd said no. And they don't. Verse number 50. Then Laban and Bethuel answered. Now, this is the place where we find out, beyond a shadow of a doubt, Bethuel is definitely still alive here. But he seems to be a little bit of he's out of the loop in a lot of the other things that happen here. It seems as if his son and his apparent heir, Laban, is doing most of the heavy lifting for the household leadership. But Laban and Bethuel answered and said, "This thing has come from he who is. We cannot speak to you, bad or good." So idiomatically speaking, they're saying, we don't really have a choice in this. This is God. This is God at work. Verse 51, behold, Rebecca is before you. Take her and go. Let her be the wife of your master's son as he who is has spoken. Now, this feels weird to us living in the modern era when individuals are the ones who make their own marriage arrangements, or at least they do in the culture here in the United States. But in the past, during most of Earth's history, and quite a bit up into the modern time for some cultures that are still out there, a marriage is seen as the merging of families. And therefore, both families have to be on board with this, and both families are involved in the negotiation. And so the parents often have the final say, but so do grandparents get a say in the situation. So it is a whole family affair. And Rebecca, having grown up in that sort of culture, is on board with this. That, wow, she's just heard the miracle story as well. If God wants me to go and marry this cousin of mine, this young man down in Canaan, I'm on board with that. I can do that, especially if I've got the backing of my family. Verse 52, when Abraham's servant heard their words, he bowed himself to the earth before he who is. So once again, there is worship going on. The servant brought out jewelry of silver and gold and garments and gave them to Rebecca. So the little gold nose ring and the little gold bangles were the beginning of this offer of becoming the lady of the tent city, to be married to the heir. She's now being given a whole bunch of other goodies. He also gave to her brother, notice, dad's not really mentioned here, because as I said, I think dad's a little out of the loop. I think he might actually be bedridden. So he also gave to her brother and to her mother costly ornaments. And so here is the dowry. A dowry in ancient times was effectively things of value given to the family as a promise that the daughter, the bride-to-be, would be taken care of. It was, in effect, life insurance and perhaps in bad situations, alimony ahead of time and child support ahead of time, so that if the husband dies or divorces her, she can go home and there's support there on account. All right? So he and the men who were with him ate and drank, and they spent the night there. So they sealed the deal with a fellowship dinner. When they arose in the morning, he said, "Send me away to my master." So it's the day after his arrival, and he's ready to get back on the road. I told you, he wants to do a one-day turnaround. Her brother, Laban, and her mom said, "Let the young woman remain with us for a while, at least 10 days, and after that she may go." So they're like wanting a bridal feast. They're wanting a wedding feast. They want to draw it out for, 7 days to 10 days as a big party for the family and for the community to celebrate her change in status. And in this case, it'll be a farewell celebration as well, because she'll be going away and probably not ever coming back again. But he said to them, "Don't delay me, since he who is has prospered my way. Send me away that I may go to my master." So again, it seems as if he is really worried about Abraham, worried that he might pass away before he gets back. So they said, "Well, let us call the young woman and ask her, because in the proper way, she has free will choices involved in this." They called Rebecca and said to her, "Will you go with this man?" And she said, "I will go." So she is all on board with this. And she is even ready to forego a big party with her family so that she can head out and start her new life, which, because of time, we will have to wait a little bit until we get back into the Word and see more.